Okay, so we were discussing the whole question of how to perceive the impact of hezekriah, whether to perceive it as something that affects the person, the soul of the person, the emotional anguish, or whether it's more about how it prevents someone from functioning within his household and the implications thereof. So just in terms of Rishonim, who kind of explicitly say one way or another, and I should also emphasize that these issues are not exclusive of each other, and they certainly could both exist, and it could vary depending on what kind of situation we're talking about. But just in terms of where you find one idea or the other emphasized, so the Ramban that we've come back to a few times in Chazkas Abatim and Daphnin Tess, there the Ramban explicitly sees it as an issue of personal suffering and or personal ramifications, and understands that to be the reason for the rift that we discussed yesterday, that we don't assume a chazaka in the context of this particular hezekriah question. And the Rush is in a tshuva, which is called Tzadiches, which I put on the sources earlier, was quoted in the tour. Recall that the Rush had a tshuva in which he explicitly says, talking about the Gina, talking about this garden setting, that the Gina nefsedet, that it is lost, meaning its value is reduced, because when people are spying on you there, you're not able to use it the way that you normally would use it. Essentially, this issue of menias tashmishin, of stopping and preventing the full use of the property. Now, the broader context of that rush is particularly interesting. As I mentioned before we started, that this is an area, this whole hezekriah sugya, is an area where there are a lot of practical tshuvas written, a lot of piskei din, a lot of real-life scenarios, comes up in everyday life, nowadays, every day, all throughout history. We have all kinds of complicated real-life situations that Dayanim address. So one of them, Rush has in this tshuva, where he talks about, say, the following scenario. So you have Reuven has a house with a window. And next to him, Shimon has a house with a window. And next to them, Levi has a gina. And Levi is not affected by Reuven's house, because Shimon's house is in between. So the window that he would have is blocked by Shimon's house in between. The window that he does have is blocked by Shimon's house in between. And Shimon, he can see into Levi's field, but they have a chazaka. He's been doing this for many years. And you may recall that yesterday when we said that the Rush's position about the chazaka not taking effect, he was specifically talking about the wall situation, right, where each one can say, I was silent because I was waiting for you to start first. There's a mutual situation going in both directions. But a situation of a window going on to a property where really the aggressor is the window owner, not a computer reference. So if the other guy, the one being seen by him, allows it, so then it seemed like, according to the rest of his logic, that could create a chazaka. Right. So in this scenario, so Shimon has a chazaka to be able to open his window onto Levi, and Reuven is blocked anyway. Okay, so far so good. You got the picture in your mind. Imagining the houses, the streets, the whole neighborhood, the whole picture. OK, Okay, so then Reuven ends up, he's got aspirations. So Reuven ends up acquiring Shimon's house. And then the house comes down. Now you have Reuven with a window that directly overlooks Levi's property. Can Levi do anything about it? What would you say? Yeah, Zach?
Yes, because he is that Chazaka guy.
Okay, is that true?
It's the Chazaka between the other two people that have nothing to do with him.
Is that true? Maybe. interrogation. So it could be. So the Rosh in this tshuva, he considers it from two angles. You know, on the one hand, so can we say that Reuven had a chazaka because his window is in the same place it always was, and he's been there forever? So, what would you say to that? He had it there, Beheter, right? He had it there at a time when he was allowed to, so...
It wasn't presenting any issues at the time.
Right? So since it wasn't presenting any issues, if we focus specifically on the macha component of, or the macha potential, of the victim. So if the victim had no reason to speak up because it wasn't doing anything to him, so the fact that he didn't speak up till now is not significant. So therefore, that's not something that we can really factor in. However, whatever impact Levi had from being overseen, by being looked at, so he was dealing with that until now, because he had Shimon in between. So from that perspective, the Rosh thought that that was more compelling. But the fact that Reuven is where he always was, okay, that's not meaningful, as you said, because it wasn't causing any problems for man. But the fact that from the impact to Levi, there was that impact, and that's just continuing that impact, so that he thought was significant. Now, Zach's point is interesting to consider because it opens up a whole other avenue that when we say, I except being looked at by you. So it seems like, at least from this particular tshuva, that it's not really individual specific. Right? That when Levi, the lookee here in this case, so when he decided he was okay with being spied upon or being seen, so it's not that he decided it's okay for Shimon to see him. It's that Islam, the idea of being visible, is what he was able to tolerate. And that's what negates his ability to complain now, which is interesting. And in that context, the Rosh has the statement that potentially the issue was the hefsed of the gina, and the loss of the tashmish. So it's an interesting scenario, but you see also the Rosh is essentially consistent with what he says here in his comments to Baba Basra, that if you're looking at it through the lens of monetary rights and of usage of the property, so that's essentially the consistent path here, that he's saying that whatever restrictions this guy had, he already had accustomed himself to. And therefore, he can't argue that that's not there anymore, because he was okay with that from the beginning. And also to see it as focused on that rather than the personal element is also consistent, because even if the Rif and the Ramban building on the Rif focused on the personal element, but when we saw yesterday the Rush giving his reason why Chazaka can't be assumed, he didn't focus on that. He focused us on the fact that it just wasn't a genuine Chazaka, because each one has a good reason to not have spoken up till now. Zach?
I don't understand how exactly other Rush's point is that he generally gave up, you know, or he generally was okay with being seen. It's inherently specific to the situation. It could be if I'm okay with being seen because, you know, this window only sees a certain amount of my land, and I feel like I'm willing to deal with that loss, but a window from a different angle might be something more significant. Or Shimon is a trustworthy guy, whereas Levi's a not trustworthy guy, or, you know, hundreds of other mitigating factors.
So those are all very fair questions, right? And it highlights kind of one of the central subjectivities of this sigyut and of this web of sigyut. And a part of it, and it's really, I don't know if it's fundamentally different than other sigyuts and shas, but maybe to an aspect it is, you know, just that, you know, maybe it is really a very different kind of sigyut in this way, that what we've seen from the beginning is that we're dealing with a fundamental balance issue. Right? And every extra detail in every extra case that you see is sharpening the balance a little bit. And saying, okay, you know, where do things lie on this spectrum? Right? If we're going to say that there's always some impact of exposure, right? Everyone would prefer complete, you know, at least for the purposes of doing what they want to do, everybody would prefer complete privacy and isolation. And everybody is forced to share and to compromise to some degree. So where does the line become significant? Right? Where is it that this is too much? And when does it shift from being my problem just to live my life without being spied on by you? And when does it become your problem to say that you're getting too much in my way? So that's the central dividing line between a lot of these cases. So the distinctions that you're raising, you know, theoretically are meaningful. But the question is, at what point can, you know, if we have to really, we're talking about significant dollar and cent kind of questions here, right? So we're talking about whether I can build my house the way I want to or not, whether I have to pay for half of a wall. So these are all cases where we have to draw a line somewhere. So how much can I say that, yes, it's true, until now there was a window overlooking my property and it was 10 feet away, and now it's 15 feet away. Or, you know, now you have to stand this way, you have to stand that way. But Lamaisa, at what point does it shift from one side of the equation to the other? So we need to identify those points. Essentially saying that this guy, Levi, was limited in what he could do because he's just not totally alone. So Reuven can say, okay, so you weren't alone then, you're not alone then. So you had to accept it not being alone. So the fact that it's me now instead of Shimon, you have to deal with it. You know, and the idea of somebody being trustworthy, you know, the question of how much does that factor in also, is itself a relevant question. Now, the whole issue also of Menias Tashmishin, so a part of what we see here is that if a person theoretically can decide, okay, there's a certain part of the day where I can expect to be able to have privacy, and I can get my work done then, so then I can take on the responsibility to manage my time and to try to function within that kind of a framework. But when it's 24/7. I have no idea where you're coming from, when you're going to be there, and how to structure my day. So then you're totally eliminating my functionality. So that makes a qualitative difference. So the difference between being visible to you all the time or being visible to you at unpredictable time, as opposed to in a more limited way, completely shift the landscape. Are you have a question?
Yeah. Can you say that like, moving, it's not a din in that fact that maybe it's more of a din in that when moving purchase, a similar mentality acquiring a chazaka that they were looking to steal. Meaning like,
that's a great question, and also thank you for highlighting the value of the gift, and as you mentioned, knowing all the Gemaras in the sector will always serve you well. Knowing all the Gemaras everywhere will serve you well. So thank you for highlighting that. But think about it though for a second. What's the difference though between the cases? So in the case of the Shova, right, so there, you're talking about an actual tchus that one could theoretically want. Here, it's important to, especially to avoid creepiness, that we're not actually Reuven, presumably, is not actually looking for the right to try on Levi. He's looking for his right to live his life as he wants to, without worrying that that also impacts on Levi. So, that's not a commodity per se. You know, the ability to see him is not a commodity. And that's something that somebody might acquire. But here, it's just about him being able to continuing to function with his own property and to not have to worry about the fact that it has an impact on somebody else's property. It's interesting because there's also a discussion on the Ramah. I think it gave you this to look at. If not, so you should do Kufr and Dalit in the Ramah. Can you give you this to look at? Yeah, well, so it's in the Mechaber and the Ramah, but the whole question, if you have a window and there's a house in the middle, related to this case in the Rush, and the house falls down. So the window was there, the heter, right, because it wasn't overseeing anything before that. And then the obstacle in between fell down. So now, all of a sudden, you're in the position to see somebody. So does that, there, it's not because of any kind of a major difference in the situation, is that the lookee, right, the person who is now visible, he never agreed to be looked at. It's just that the looker, when he set up his window, it was legitimate. It was no clear path of sight. And now there's a path of sight afterwards. So is he now obligated to close up his window? Is it his problem? So this is 2 days from the Ramah, actually over there in Kufrin Dalet. And the second one, it says you don't have to. It says it's a hezek to memela. That it's just something that happens on its own, essentially. You know, which would, it's a good question what that means. Chazon Yechezkel is Chezkel Abramsky, who was one of the Dayanim in London, and he wrote a sefer on Tosefta, a very important sefer, not so many from the Tosefta. So he understood that to mean that the idea that you could say it's a hezek memela, which sounds like it means it just happens on its own, that the focus is on the impact of usage, rather than on any personal suffering, and that's why we could view it that way. All right.
What does that mean? I'm using it as not personal suffering.
So I assume what he means is that if I'm actually hurting you, so then maybe there's a greater responsibility on me to stop hurting you. But if I'm, my presence is limiting your functionality, but it's not because I did anything, whatever I did was legitimate, but now circumstances have changed and your functionality has been compromised, so then that's something that's a reality of our economic balance, and just it happens on its own, it's not necessarily my problem.
That would be different from that price that we brought in the beginning of days, like a Buddha in a field where it's similar case, so they built the wall and it fell down.
So actually, let's talk about that. Let's kind of segue into that. Right. So let's talk about exactly that. So the case of the wall here on Days and Days, where the Gemara wanted to try to prove that Hezek or Iyah Shmei Hezek, because if they did have a wall and the wall fell, right, and the difference between that and the case we were just talking about was that this was some other building, in the case a minute ago, there's some other building happened to be there. But here we're now talking back to our Mishnah situation of shared walls. So if you had a wall and the wall fell, so then everyone agrees that you have to rebuild. So why should that be? Right? So the Gemara says, Nafal Shaini, that there's a difference between a wall that was there and fell, and the question of whether to put up a wall in the first place. So why? Why does it matter? Why is it? Why should it be that even if I were to say you don't need a wall to begin with, if there was a wall, so then you have to rebuild it. Why is that so clear? I want to take a stab at it. Yeah, Zach?
The wall has a chazaka
in and of itself, regardless of other factors. The wall has a chazaka. What does that mean, practically?
As in, on your property, both of you are used to having the wall there.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of the separate hazard regia issues, there's a value in sort of keeping things as they were and retaining the status quo.
Okay, so but just flesh that a little bit more. Why is there a value in keeping that as well? I mean, it's definitely true what you're saying, but just to flesh that a little bit. So, this on the surface, this seems to be a machlokas Rashi post over here. Right, so what does Rashi say? On Beis and Beis. Right, somebody want to read this Rashi for me? Nafal Shaini? Okay, so how would you interpret that? Set a standard or an agreement?
An agreement.
It just sounds like from Rashi that it's an agreement, right? But basically, that's the deal. That once that we know also from our Gemara that whether Hezek Shmia, Hezek Ria is called Hezek or not, is itself a question. But if they agreed to make a wall, if they made a kinyan with each other, so then that should be binding. So if they had a wall already, so then presumably that reflects the fact that that's their deal. So it doesn't matter whether Hezek is considered Hezek or not, that if they had agreed to have a wall, then they're mutually obligated to each other to have a wall. If they have a wall, it sounds like they agree to it. What's interesting is that Tosis seems to have a different, a very short Tosis. Now you want to continue the reading from Nafal Shaini towards the bottom of the page? Okay, is that different from what Rashi said?
I'm not sure if it's different, but it's essentially more of a psychological
Okay. So how would you translate it? Let's say, so shahur gulu lots of ever has. What does that mean?
They are like used to doing frantic things. And they learned, they're like gotten used to really being more careful.
Yeah, right. So it seems to speak to the reality of how they function and whatever habits they form. So now it's going to be very difficult to change. So Lamaisa, their lifestyle is impacted by the wall coming down. Hi, Zach?
Well, then can we say that perhaps Tosfos is sort of on the side of, like, maybe it being an emotional concern?
Maybe. But it's hard to say for sure, because it could just mean just in terms of your business, in terms of your functionality, that, or even not necessarily business, but even just the usage of your property, that this is what my lifestyle has developed to do, and now I can't do that anymore, so, or it's impacted. It's not clear whether it means that now just my whole style is crimped, or it means that I'm just not going to be able to, so I'm if it means I just can't change, and I'm going to keep doing what I was doing because I'm so habituated and you're going to see me, so then it sounds like you're right. It sounds like it's about the fact that I'm suffering from you looking at it. So either way, it seems like there's a difference between Rashi and Tosis as to why this changes the facts on the ground, literally. Right? The wall that broke didn't break, so why is that so significant? So Rashi focusing on the fact that the sound has to deal, it seems like this is what they agreed upon. And Tosis seems to be saying it's about the impact it's going to have. That, in other words, the whole question of can I function when you're looking at me, is that my problem or is that your problem? So even if we say in general it's my problem, but if the circumstances were such that I reasonably got used to not having to worry about it, so then that does become your problem. So that's an interesting idea. There are some who suggest that a difference between Rashi and Tosfos would be that, let's say, you were not the original owners. And the two neighbors put up a wall, and then they each hold, or somebody died and their heirs took over. So now you have second generation owners, and the wall falls. So does that have the same rule? So it should depend, right? According to Rashi, it would seem like it doesn't necessarily have the same rule. But according to Tosfos, presumably, yeah, this is the setup we were used to. So it wouldn't matter as much whether I set it up intentionally. Sounds like it presumably means the same people themselves originally agreed to this, because if it was different people, so it's hard to see why that should matter, that they agreed to it. Somebody else agreed to it. But now, still, it creates a certain reality coming in. But you have to figure out how much does that matter. Chazanish had a comment where he talked about the possibility that really Rashi and Tosfos may be not necessarily arguing, but they could be harmonized. Could say that they're actually saying two halves of the same sentence. How could you possibly combine them? They do sound like they're focusing on different things. Max?
And you could just say that Rashi's pointing out that they originally agreed to do this thing, even though what they were saying, like, they wanted their husband to take care of us. This is what they take care of having privacy.
Okay, that's reasonable, but then I still don't know if you need Tosfos for that. Like, that's just going to be Rashi by himself. Rashi would say that because these are people who like this space. So, they agree. Right, they could be true, but they had to make one thing contingent on the other. A little bit more of a leap. And maybe you could say that the question is essentially like this. Right. So when you have a wall between two people, And we're not sure if you had to have the wall, because we're not sure about Hezek, Yesh, Mehezek, or not. So when the wall falls down, should we assume that they carry an obligation to rebuild it? So perhaps what Rashi is saying is that, yes, because that was their initial agreement that that's what they would do. But you could ask a question on Rashi. You could say that maybe they decided that at the time, okay, this is what we'll agree to do. So, you know, they got together and they said, listen, there's a wall available on sale at Walmart, and we can get it for a good deal, and we can share it. So what do you say? Should we go in together on this wall? And they both said, yeah, seems like a good idea. Right, but who knew that 5 years from now, the wall was going to fall, and now you're going to come to me again, and say, I got to reach into my power, and I was willing to do it once. But that I'm going to have to keep paying for this wall? Ouch. Okay.
Yes. It was Mechayev no matter what.
It was Mechayev to have the wall in the first place, right? But
it's a phase zero.
No, so Gezeri, we don't know if it's there yet, because this is assuming even if you say Lav Shmei Hezek. Right? So if we say that we don't know yet that there's a din that you have to have a wall. So what the Gemara was saying is that even Al Atzad, that you don't have to have a wall, but if you did build a wall and the wall fell, so then you have to rebuild it. So if Rashi says the reason you have to rebuild it is because they both agreed that was the deal. But you could ask a reasonable question and say, listen, you came to me and you said, here's a wall, it costs this much money, let's go in on it together. And I said, all right, yeah, it seems like a good investment, let's do it. And now you're going to tell me that every couple of years it keeps falling and it needs maintenance, and I got to lay out money again and again to keep rebuilding the wall, and no one told me about the Walmart's deficiencies. I got to keep throwing good money after bad. So I never agreed to that. All right, that could be a reasonable claim. Yeah.
You could say that initially, it establishes each side as a private space, similar to like you had the Hezek of a house.
Mm-hmm.
And then even though they only agreed to this one wall, they set this location, this half of the chaser, as a private space, so then you can, personal kind of comes in, and this is a private space, or needs to be a private space. Your answer is, you should need to be that.
Okay, so Tosfos comes in, right, so that's the key point, so to say the last, so they establish it a private space,
And then, it's a private space, and they're used to doing private things like that.
Uh-huh.
It's established like that, both in like, and related to that in their psychology.
In their psychology, in their deal.
Yeah.
Right, that's essentially what the Chazon Ish basically understands, that when we said, let's build a wall, so then you started envisioning the whole story. You said, oh, you want to build a wall? Okay. Well, if we have a wall pack, it'll be nice, and then I'll be able to have some privacy, and I'll be able to function in such and such a way, and, okay, I'm going to they get used to that. You know, it's interesting, just Al Pi Derech HaMusar, while we're talking about this point, but I guess it actually directly relates. We could take advantage of the Musar value at the same time. That, remember the Shiva of Karen Biavna, when I was there, it was a little before all your time, but the original founding of Shiva of Karen Biavna was a very larger-than-life personality, who Chaim Yaakov Goldach, who was big Baal Medrash, I think. We used to talk about this was one of the major Yesodos in Hashkafa also. So he would talk about the Skira, seemingly conflict that you find in the Koros. So on the one hand, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that Kachi Darka Shel Torah, Pasa Melech Tocho, Amayim Shuvitishta, that this is the path of Torah, you just have a little bit of bread, a little bit of dirty water, and there's people on the floor, you have a very sparse existence. Sounds like you really should live in a very minimal way. On the other hand, there are a lot of other statements in Chazal that say that the world was created for us to benefit from, and that from the Yom HaDin they're going to ask us, did you take full benefit, and then they from the Olami. So how do you relate to the conflict between the sources that say you should really live very minimally and not look for any kind of luxuries, and the other sources that sound like the extra hanas of this world are out there when they're permissible hanas are there for us to appreciate. So he would basically describe a path that it's about being able to benefit from it without becoming meshubish to it, without it owning you. And so the ideal Talmud Chacham is somebody who is able to appreciate everything the world has to offer, but he also has the restraint and the sense of priorities so that he can also live without it. So that when the Mishnah says, Kachi Darsa Shel Torah, it says all of those factors, the Art Tishon, the oath of the Torah who Osek, that he's sleeping on the ground and he's just eating a little bread and he's involved in Torah. So the point is that he can still be involved in Torah and that's all he has. He's not so involved in the luxuries of this world that he can't function without them. But when they're available, then he's able to realize what insights and what benefit they have. So I'm describing this, that he says that you can imagine a guy, the guy goes on a date with his wife. That's a new concept to him. Talmudically, Motsiya Tishto means he divorces. It's an unusual application, not a good date. So he says he goes to the new restaurant. And it's expensive, but okay. So while he's there, he's like, wow, this is really something. And he starts to think, I've got to come here more often. And I come here once a month. Well, it's not going to be that I've got to come once a week. I've got to come a few times. How am I going to afford that? So I'm going to have to work more. I'm going to have to borrow money from my friend. He's not going to want to lend me. How come he doesn't want to lend to me? It's not nice. And you're going to mind you're already getting mad at him. So basically the point is that as soon as you start going down that road, you start envisioning, oh, it's okay, I could get used to this. And then once you have that mentality, then it's hard to turn back. And that's the point of the Mishnah, that you're able to appreciate it without becoming committed to it. And he also said that pshat. The Gemara says that kol olam nizon mishum chanina b'ni, that the whole world is sustained because of the tzlus for chanina. And Chanina Bini, Dailo B'Kuvecha Me'er Shabbos, Ayer Shabbos. And Chanina Bini, he can survive on just one carob, none of us can even wait to eat carob, from Ayer Shabbos, Ayer Shabbos. So what's the point of that Gemara? It's ironic, the whole world is sustained to him, and he could just live from one Shabbos to the next without eating anything. So is this point to irony? So the point is that it's saying that Kol Olam Nizan Mishum Chanina Bini, that all of the Gashmias in the world exists for the Talmud Chacham who's able to appreciate it and to glean what he can glean from it, but he's also able to survive without it, and that's why it's something that can he's able to perceive what the role of this Gashmius is. So why are we talking about this? Because basically it just fits this whole model that, okay, so maybe theoretically you could say that the two neighbors could live side by side without such a wall. Maybe if you were to say, Hezek Rehavad Shmei Hezek, then they could function. Okay, I don't have total privacy, and I'll cope. I understand they have to share the space. And that's just the way it is. But once you start saying, okay, you can live for a while with this scenario, so then you're imagining, all right, then I could get used to such a thing, and it's hard to turn back. So when one neighbor said to the other, Kim Sol, according to the opinion that Raj Mahesik, they didn't have to build a wall. But when one said to the other, I think we should build a wall. So they started thinking, okay, I'll build a wall, and that's nice, and I'll be able to do this, I'll be able to do that, and that's going to set a pattern for me. So this is the Chazanish, essentially, that's what Rashi is saying, that when you can't say that, okay, I agree to build a wall now, but don't come back to me when it falls, because that's too much, because a part of what that agreement is that you're playing it into the future, and saying, okay, so then I'm going to get used to having such a thing. And if this wall falls down 20 years from now, I'm not going to be able to say, well, okay, it was a nice run, but I'm not interested in rebuilding it. I'll have to recognize that building the wall now means that we're going to get used to it, and that if it should fall, then that does mean that we're not going to be going back. That we're going to be working off that premise. All right.
How does Father Nietzsche square his opinion with, I guess, our Nazi, that we had on the second-generation wall?
So according to that, maybe it wouldn't be a Nazi. He's not committed to that Nazi mina. Right, so it could be that, because especially if you just vote with Tosfos anyway. Right, but what he's adding is that Tosfos really can work with Rashi, and that might set it up. Okay, so let's just quickly recap. So, and there's a lot more we're going to say about some of the practicalities, but we want to make time for Chazara. So let's imagine that tomorrow we'll start with going back to day one for a few days, and then we'll revisit some of the practicalities. Just a quick recap we spoke about today. So we talked about how some of the Rishonim did make explicit statements according to both of these sides of these things. Not that that makes anything exclusive, because there's still other elements, but the Ramban highlighting the Tzar HaGuf, and the Rosh and the Tshuva highlighting the Menias Tashmishin. And in that Tshuva, it was an interesting case where he talked about the Reuven's house and Shimon's house and Levi's field, and the Shimon's house, which had a chazaka, and Reuven, which wasn't causing problems, and the house disappeared. So how did that change things? So the chazaka Reuven had wasn't really meaningful because it wasn't causing problems till now, but the chazaka that Levi was used to being restricted, that was more meaningful. And we discussed how, even though there are subtle differences between the two, but the whole issue here is that essentially you have to take a side one way or another, and we have to figure out what kind of factors push you on one side or the other. So there's only so many distinctions that can be entered into the algorithm, essentially. And then we talked also about the question of somebody who has a wall that's not looking for anybody because there's something in between and that thing falls down. The 2 days in the Ramah, whether he is obligated to fix it or not, whether it's Hazikid or Mela. And then we went back to the Gemara about the neighbors who decided to build the wall fell, so everyone agreed it has to be rebuilt. And the question of why that is, Rashi, because that was their original deal, Tosfos, because they got used to functioning in such a setting. And it sounds like you're talking about two different reasons, which may have enough kamina for new people coming in, but also has nishla of them as together, that Rashi focusing on agreement doesn't necessarily mean that that should be an agreement to constantly spend on maintenance and rebuilding, but maybe together with Tosis, that knowing that that's going to create a habituation, so then that is why you can assume that yes, that was indeed the original case. Allah the Rashi is almost sure about the guy who becomes committed to his high-flying lifestyle. Okay, so I wish everyone a Yom Shavuot Fulbel Kachot, a day of double goodness, double refuah to all of you in the Zoom quarantine, and we hope to see you back here very, very soon. And this should be only good things. Maybe.